Good morning and welcome to the Coffee and Cap Rates Podcast, your go-to source for New York City's latest commercial real estate insights. This program is brought to you by Ariel Property Advisors.
Hi, everyone. This is Shimon Shkuri with Ariel Property Advisors here with the Coffee and Cap Rates Podcast. And today we want to speak about what we think about this new housing policy, and more specifically, to talk a little bit about where we think investors or what investor behavior is going to show as a result of this policy. I have today my partners with me, Victor Sozio, Sean Kelly, and Mike Tortorici, and we're all going to talk about this one-to-one. So what did we have there? We had what we think overall good news housing policy with some challenging caveats. The challenging caveats come specifically into the existing assets, specifically into the good cause eviction, and also the change, a positive change, but is it enough change with IREIs, with individual apartment improvements? Let's start with the good cause eviction, and let's start with Vic. Vic, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Simone. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thank you. And I know we had a great discussion, all of us, earlier about this pretty extensive policy. And it's exciting. It's exciting because finally we have some path or some clearer path as to how to build more buildings. But what does it mean for existing assets, Vic, specifically the good cause eviction?
Sure. And I think you're right, Simone. I think the whole state housing deal does do a lot to help in the creation of multifamily housing across the city. But it does seem, at least in our early opinion and assessment, to fall short in some ways as it relates to its impact on existing multifamily housing. And when I look at the state housing deal, there's really three major parts that relate to the existing stock. It's what they changed on the individual apartment improvements, which we'll get into. It's a good cause eviction, which was a major part of it. And there is, I think, a good piece of policy as it relates to legalizing the basement apartment. So that really relates to and affects our existing stock. On the good cause eviction bill, which was probably the main headline that a lot of people were focused on, there were a lot of properties that became exempt. And that was a concession, I think, that was given. The mechanism that was put in place is much less severe than what was being discussed earlier. So you could increase 10% or 5% plus CPI, which is much more than the 3 to 5% or so that it was being contemplated beforehand. But overall, I still think it is a negative impact to a lot of these existing multifamily owners that are not exempt, and even those that might have been built in 2009 or 10 that, you know, have 30 years of exemption, but are already starting to burn that fuse. I think practically, if you're operating at close to market, you tend to have natural turnover. So it really shouldn't impact your ability to get a good increase. But where I do think it has negative aspects to it is many owners like the option of getting possession of an apartment when a lease is due on a free market apartment. And that's part of their attraction to it and the ease of operation. And this definitely changes the way that works. It also changes the ability to get rent increases after you having an event like COVID or a development site next door or whatever happens, where your rents become suppressed for a season or two seasons or whatever the case might be. This does change the timeline in recouping and realizing those rents or those market rents again when the market rebounds. So it definitely changes the way the buildings are operated for those that are not exempt. And I could tell you, you know, it definitely plays into the psyche of investment and investors, not only the institutional equity providers around the country who see these headlines and see, you know, more policy, restrictive policy regulation on units that weren't regulated. But I can tell you, you know it, Shimon, we have some negotiations right now that are already starting to be impacted by this policy change, and the buyers have to really absorb the news and think through how it's going to change the way that they intended to move forward.
Yes, thank you. And I think that's very insightful. So what you're saying, Vic, which you checked out also before, is look, it could have been a lot worse, but what's really bad here is that there is an opening the door into regulating free market units. It does affect institutional capital and how they view the world. We believe long term, it's not a great thing for New York City, and we're starting to seal this right now. So the good cause eviction, not good, at least for real estate today, but there are other things that are better. So IAIs, right? Individual apartment improvements. The formula for that has changed drastically to being something completely meaningless post-HSTPA, the Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act of 2019. So rent stabilized units before the new housing policy could be marginally affected with renovations. You invest $15,000, you get $81 back or something like that on a monthly basis. And then after a bunch of years, that $81 disappears. They did change the IAIs now. So it's a little bit better. But Vic, do you think that that is a meaningful change for rent stabilized owners today?
I think it's a marginal net positive for multifamily owners. And I think different areas are affected differently. I think outer boroughs where, you know, the potential increase to the legal rent of up to, let's call it, I don't know, $347 or so, I think is the number, depending on the size of the building. I think that could help when you have an average rent that's hovering around $1,000 and a down apartment that's just sitting there languishing. I think in the other higher rent areas that are not, that are have units sitting vacant, you know, I don't know if that's going to necessarily induce those owners to spend a significant amount of capital into that unit to get it back online. So I do think it's a marginal benefit, and I do think some operators will utilize it. The fact that it's permanent and not amortized over or not temporary over a certain amount of time, I think, is definitely helpful. But I don't know if it moved the needle tremendously.
Yeah, I think we spoke about that. We think it's better than nothing. And, you know, we also think that, like you said, in locations that have lower rent, like in the Bronx, maybe in Upper Manhattan, that the effect is going to be more meaningful. But it's not going to create a dent in the preservation of housing in rent-stabilized housing in New York City. So thank you for that, and thank you for these insights. We sell a tremendous amount of these buildings. I'm curious to see how valuations change, if at all. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that too, Vic.
I don't know if valuations, well, it depends on which one you're talking about. For assets that are not exempt from good cause eviction, that predominantly free market asset or free market units, we'll see how the valuation changes. I think it's fair to assume that it might change in certain circumstances, or at least from the perspective of some buyers. As it relates to the IAI, I think it could be a marginal benefit, but you know, I think we have other factors in play, like very high interest rates and increasing expenses that we need to keep an eye on, and we need to see some changes there before you start to see values really truly change in that space.
Thank you. Great. And so that's, as Vic said, the existing assets. And going back to the housing policy that allows us to produce more buildings and more units, that's the new 485X, and that is the new tax abatement for residential rental. And Sean, why don't we jump into speaking about that proposal, or not proposal anymore, but law that allows developers to develop residential rental housing and get a tax abatement. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm well, Shimon. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. So look, it's great to have that policy. It's great to have a policy. What do you think is going to happen? Again, we're trying to predict. Clearly, we don't know everything, and we're trying to be humble, and we'll monitor everything that's happening. But we have, I think, enough insight to say, hey, this is what we think will happen. So hopefully that's insightful enough for our listeners here. Sean, what do you think will happen with this new policy that allows you to get a tax abatement of the developer?
Sure. So, well, let's take a step back. So the legislation starts with, you know, extending the deadline for projects that were already vested in 421A. And that's an encouragement, that's a positive policy change. And it gives some breathing room to developers who perhaps were at risk of missing the June 2026 deadline. 485X, really what's going to be interesting to see is we're going to have a lot of demand for the smaller mid-sized projects, right? The less than 100 unit projects. So you'll see more of that in the outer boroughs. What we don't know yet is the impact on the construction costs from the increased wage requirements on projects between 100 to 149 units and then 150 plus units. Additionally, there's going to be administrative costs that come along with that. And I think it's going to take a little time for that to play out. But I'll give you an example. We went into contract last year on a development site in the Gowanus, or actually earlier this year. And there were a really small pool of buyers for that particular asset. It's a mid-sized site. It's about 75,000 square feet. And one of the challenges in marketing that site was, or for most investors, was even with enrolling in the governor's program, which most investors didn't want to do, they were faced with a lack of equity providers and lenders willing to lend on the asset. So what 485X does is it really invites a lot of capital back into the market, both from the lending institutions as well as equity providers. And I think we're going to see the immediate impact in markets like the Gowanus, where we had projects that were under construction or were about to start construction that pumped the brakes and paused as we were expecting this new legislation to get passed.
I think it's great. I think you mentioned a bunch of things here. The 421A, the 421A16, as we call it, could be extended, but there are certain caveats and nuances there. I think you cannot build the C, the option C or option G. So you have to look at these details. But the 485X, you mentioned that there's a lot of different prevailing wage and other requirements that we'll need to look at. But the insight is that deals that are below 100 units are going to do well. So it's super interesting. I know that Vic, you, Sean, Mike, and I spoke before this conversation and had some examples of some sites that are going to benefit immediately. So this is something that we all should look forward to as brokers, but also as landlords or owners of land. Because it's very, very beneficial. Anything else that we missed here, Mike or Vic, on the 485X, or should we move to office to resi?
I would just echo some of the things Sean said and you, Shimon. I think that a lot of attention from the state and from the city has been on trying to create a little bit more housing everywhere, you know, attacking the missing middle, as they sometimes say. And I think that option B in the 485X, the sub 100 units, can have a real profound impact on that. A lot of developers for a long time have been saying that the 130% AMI requirement, particularly in the outer boroughs, was an obstacle to filling units because the rents were more or less similar to what you'd see on free market, only with a whole lot of paperwork. So there was a lot of demand to get it back to kind of the old 80-20. And this was this the fact that this does that to me was a nice surprise. And then you pair that with the pending City of Yes, which hopefully it goes through later this year and adds a little bit more of a bump to the FAR throughout the whole city. And you could really see a nice amount of new supply coming to the market fairly quickly. So I was really encouraged by it. I think paired with the City of Yes, it really can make a dent in our production needs.
That's great, Mike. Thank you. And you know what? If we have you, Mike, why don't we talk a little bit about office to residential? There was that in that piece of legislation, there was some positive news for office conversions to residential. What are the news and what do we think about it?
So, I mean, we're excited about it. It was great 20 years ago to see the 421G revitalized the financial district and turn it from a sleepy, you know, office district to a 24/7 live, work, play environment. And now some other parts of the city, office districts, commercial districts have gotten a bit sleepy here and there. Midtown, the garment district, and hopefully this goes a long way in revitalizing those areas, revitalizing office buildings that are essentially obsolete with the new work from home environment that we have. And you know, it's exciting to see the legislature take this important step, both on the new tax abatement program that they've put in place for office conversions, and also lifting the FAR cap. You know, we already know a bunch of institutional investors that are excited about this, and surely there's still going to be plenty of office buildings for whatever reason. Maybe they're mid-block, maybe the layouts don't work, that are going to be torn down. But for those that have layouts that can accommodate conversion to housing, this will go a long way in creating a lot of units, hopefully very quickly, and also affordable units too. They've added in there, I believe about 25% of the units must be affordable on these conversions. So the city clearly needs it. Certain districts of the city clearly need it. And the state finally came through after what's been years of talking about what to do with our old and more obsolete office buildings.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. And as you mentioned to us before, the hard part was to get the abatement, to get the state to tell us that they're going to subsidize something when it comes to office conversions. And as you said, you know, now with the zoning with the city, and you know, the if there's a clear path with a building that doesn't have the tenancy, we'll see more conversions. And as you mentioned, Mike, the blueprint is already there. 25 years ago, we've seen that happen in the financial district with a 421G. So look, just for our listeners, we have a policy. We have a housing policy. That's good news. It creates certainty. As Vic said in the beginning, it's much better for creation of housing than existing buildings. Nevertheless, it's a good thing for New York City. It seems like this is one of the things we needed in order to see movement in transactions. So with that, I hope everybody understood what we've done here. And with that, I wanted to say again, we're going to track this. We're going to have some more discussions about it. This just came out. These are some speculative thoughts we had, and we thought about sharing it with you. Vic, thank you. Mike, thank you. Sean, thank you. And I think we'll end here.